Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk. Each week we gather around and explore the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. Good to have your company. If you have a technology experience that you would like to share, then we would definitely like to hear about that. TechTalk at rnib.org.uk is our email address, techtalk at rnib.org.uk, and we look forward to hearing from you. Coming up this week, we'll be catching up with the latest news from CES 2025, the annual Consumer Electronics Show. Jackie Brown shares her thoughts on the Orbit Speak Plus, and we'll also be hearing about changes to the new RNIB Bookshare website. That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. Joining us, our co-hosts, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovic and Callum Stoneman. Welcome into you all. Jackie, let's come to you first. What's on your tech table this time?
As well as the Orbit Speak that I got for Christmas from Santa. It was very nice. It came via India, via Lapland to where I live in Northern Ireland. So that was really nice, very unexpected. But I also got a Sonos Roam 2 because my first Roam seems to have given up the ghost. It was replaced once already with a dodgy battery and it's done it again. So I don't know what's going on with that, but Santa very kindly bought me the Roam 2.
That's the portable speaker.
Portable Sonos one. Yeah.
And so you can use it as part of your Sonos system, and I think you can use it as a Bluetooth speaker as well.
You can. Yeah. It's a nice little device, and I like it. If I'm, you know, in another room, I can just pick it up and take it around. If I'm, you know, popping outside, I can even put it in my pocket and take it out as well.
Pocket?
Yeah. Well, it sticks out, but I can do it.
big pockets. Yeah. I mean, I heard it described as about the size of a water bottle.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's a sort of a triangular shape in a way. It's got, you can stand it up on its end and listen to it, or you can lie it sort of sideways on its little rubber feet. It's a nice little speaker. It's got quite good sound. Maybe some people would say, well, you can get a lot cheaper speakers, and that's very true, but it depends what you want. It goes with the Sonos ecosystem, and so far, so good. I'd like to try and resurrect my original Roam, though, because I don't know what's happened to it. But anyway, that's another story for another day, maybe.
I like on the Roam, they've got tactile indicators as well for the, you know, volume up and down. I mean, the soft buttons, and they've got a kind of silicon rubbery coating, but
yeah,
they are tactile and you can find them by touch, which was a little bit of a departure from what they did with the Move, which was their bigger mobile speaker.
Yeah, so that's great.
Some nice little design cues there on the Sonos Roam, the Toblerone shaped portable Bluetooth speaker.
So that's a good description, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
The nice thing with it is as well, it can sort of be used as a portable, if you put Lady A or Google Assistant on there, it can be used as a portable, you know, smart speaker in that sense as well. Now that needs Wi-Fi, so you wouldn't be able to take it out and about and do that necessarily unless you've got a hotspot or something, but just for carrying an Alexa device around your house, it works pretty nicely for that.
It is actually, but I'm not sure that they do the Google Assistant on it anymore.
Really?
I thought that they'd done away with it because I never ever got it to work on mine. It was only the A-Lady that I got on my Sonos speaker. So I don't know if one of you know different. Please tell.
Yeah, it did work back in the mists of time. I remember having it for a while, but not recently.
I think they've fallen out.
Probably.
Yeah, maybe. Callum, what's new with you?
This is a sort of speaker related as well. So for Christmas, someone got our son, James, who's 6 months old. A few family members chipped in and bought him a Tony's box,
yes,
which I'd never heard of. They're not new.
Yep.
Jackie already knows what I'm talking about.
I do.
Who's Tony?
So this is...
Is he on next week?
Yeah, he's coming up next week. This is a little box that you get. It's like I'd say maybe about the size of a the old school Amazon Echoes, maybe. And so that's the Tony's box. And then you get these characters. They're just called Tonys. And they're linked to different things, different audiobooks or like music. So, for example, he's got a couple which they got with it, where he's got one for Paddington. So you just pop that on top of the box and then it starts reading a Paddington audiobook. It's Stephen Fry reading a Paddington book. There's another one for In the Night Garden. And again, you just literally just place the character on top of the box and it starts playing kind of an audio version of In the Night Garden. There's a couple of ones that come with it called Creative Tonys, where you can put your own recordings on there or you can buy content to go on. So it's just a nice way of playing audiobooks or playing, you know, music. You can get some which are kind of interesting, some which are like lullabies. And the reason I bring this up is just because it's just so accessible. You literally just take a character, put it on top. It like it kind of magnetically attaches to the top of the box.
The magnet.
Yeah, really nice. Like, and it just starts playing. There's no screen. Yeah. There's no kind of touch sensitive controls to mess about with. The setup was really nice and really accessible. And it's made bedtime so much easier. I mean, he's not at a point yet where he could pick his own characters and, you know, choose what he wants to listen to. But obviously he'll get to that point. But at the minute, because we've got a baby monitor, a smart baby monitor that does have the option of playing lullabies and little bits of music and stuff, but you have to do that via the app, which is pretty inaccessible. Whereas with this, you just pick a character, put it on the box, and it plays. It's just really simple.
My two grandsons, they have one between them. My older grandson Ezra, he's had it a while. It was his. It was bought for him first, but they both use it, and it's a beautiful little device. They come in lots of different colors, so you know it's you can have green, red, blue, whatever color. And as you say, Callum, it's so easy to use, and the sound is really good. It's a cube shape.
It is surprisingly good.
Yeah, and the actual box itself, the Tony box, is padded. So if you sort of dropped it, or if it fell off something where the kids are playing with it, then you know the likelihood is that it'll survive. It won't be damaged because it is padded. And there's a carry case that you can buy if you take it out in cars on the road with a family member. But the quality of sound and the ease of use. When I first saw it, I couldn't believe it. A couple of years ago, I thought, I want one of these.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
but it is a really lovely thing to have to share with you know, your children or your grandchildren or young people in the family. Because the range of characters, you know, is growing all the time. There is a dedicated Tony's website, but you can buy them in all the usual places like Smith Toys and Amazon and so on, so that they are widely available. And as I say, if you can turn the volume up and down, they're like little ears, I think, on the box that you turn the volume up and down with. And when you want to stop, you just lift the character off the magnet on the top. And it's just so dead easy to use. The only thing is, each character costs around about £15 a pot. So that's, you know, some people might say, well, you could buy a lot of books cheaper than that. But I mean, this thing does it all for you. It's got a rechargeable battery. There is, as you say, an app as well that you can upload stuff to, or a website. It's just brilliant.
I find this quite fascinating because we've recently had a new addition to the family as well. So it's something, as you were talking about it, I've been fiercely making notes just to keep this in mind for a potential present, definitely for any little ones in the family. I really like the sound of this for a very accessible gift that you can actually enjoy with little ones in your family. I really like the sound of this.
So Callum, is that the Tony's box?
Tony's, yeah. T-O-N-I-E-S. The characters themselves are just called Tonys as well.
Hubert, how are you doing?
I've not got any new tech for Christmas, I'm saddened to say, but you know that feeling where you don't really know how much you miss a device until you can't use it because it's broken? My Mantis Q40 had to be sent away for repair quicker than I kind of thought, but yes, I didn't truly realise how much I was missing that device until I actually couldn't use it, but It's here now. It has been repaired very quickly. I was very impressed at how quickly it got picked up and repaired. A simple issue as it was, but yes, my Mantis is back. I'm really glad to have it back in my life, actually. And you don't realise, yeah, how much you miss it until you actually can't have a device for whatever reason.
What went wrong?
One of the dots in one of the cells wouldn't go down. It would constantly be there. And naturally, it made things quite confusing, especially when you kind of read text that you need to then say, you know, when you're broadcasting, and suddenly one of the letters is the TH sign when it's actually supposed to be a letter D. So it was quite confusing.
Sticky dot.
Nothing worse than a sticky dot.
Okay. Well, Jackie, Callum, Hubert, welcome back. It's good to be with you. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Now, the technology year always kicks off with the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And of course, 2025 is no exception. And casting an experienced blind eye over the exhibition and the news coming out of this year's Consumer Electronics Show is the Director of Assistive Technology from Leonard Cheshire, Steve Tyler. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks very much, Dave, and happy 2025. Slightly mad 2025, if Consumer Electronics Show is anything to go by.
Oh, right. Okay, well, let's get straight into it then, because it's usually a veritable smorgasbord of technology offerings, some of which come back year after year, some of which you never hear from again. So what's grabbing your attention this time, Steve?
Most people would seem to agree, If you wanted to talk about the themes of the show this year, there's a big bundle of stuff going on in TV, a big set of things around AI being implemented in everything you can imagine, and then more generally products. Just product development has taken a very odd turn where the amalgamations of various different types of products that normally wouldn't necessarily sit comfortably in your head and possibly in use.
Well, let's deal with each of those. I mean, TVs are a bit of a mainstay, aren't they? We get TVs every year. It's usually the big players, Sony and LG and Samsung. They come along each year with a slightly better TV. I mean, is it more of the same, or is there anything really to write home about this time?
More of the same. So bigger and smaller. So the biggest TV out there, whoever wants, I mean, it's 163 inches. Not quite sure where that will fit, but that's a consumer product by LG. Samsung make another one that's 115 inches. And then you've got very, very mini TVs, again, designed to fold away and take out when you want with all the limitations that that brings. All of them have a theme of AI built in. So AI recommendations, AI to help your viewing pleasure. So being smarter about how to present imagery on screen based on the light environment in the room and all of those kinds of issues. And then similar with audio. So creating the best possible audio output that you might want, depending on where you are.
Right, so the AI is being used to kind of sense your environment, your living room, how noisy and bright it is, and then adjust the TV accordingly.
Yeah, I think the other interesting move is the one by TiVo. So TiVo, for those of you who don't necessarily know, TiVo in the UK and around the world, but in the UK used to be looked after Virgin, but looked after by Virgin Media. Elsewhere, it was a standalone product. Or service offering, quite often integrated into cable TV and so on. They've now built a TV. So there is a TiVo-powered TV on the TiVo, on the newly adopted TiVo platform. And then they've also created a sort of memory stick or stick-style device that has TiVo built into it. So a little bit like a Fire Stick or similar. You plug that into your regular TV and you get all the TiVo capability. So the big attraction of TiVo was its seamless recommendations of programs and series and films and so on that you liked to watch. It would build up a picture of the kind of thing that you liked and then make recommendations based on that. But you could also do searches across platforms and across various broadcasters and so on, and it would bring the entire business together. Not dissimilar to Apple and Google TV, much of a muchness, slightly different presentation, but still very similar kind of proposition.
In your intro, you said AI obviously continues to be a big area. Any new or interesting, unusual, different, creative uses of AI that perhaps we've not heard about previously?
Well, let me run through some of it then. The obvious candidates, Google Home in particular, is going a bundle on AI, making its existing products smarter and the products that are coming smarter. So integrating much more, and by smarter they mean broadly sounding, feeling more human-like, being more chatty, understanding more regular verbiage, more regular words that you would use as an everyday human being. So you don't have to learn weird and wonderful things to say to it to trigger it to do things.
So is this Gemini or is this some variant?
Gemini plus variants. Gemini appears to be the big thing that's in the mainstream. Then behind the scenes, there is a thing called Google Studio, which lets you do a whole host of additional functionality. Quite how that's going to pan out, I'm not sure. But they seem to be using Studio as the kind of experimental platform where you can, they'll code up a whole host of capability. For example, at the moment, there's a whole set of features around pointing your iPhone or Android product or smart glasses, certain smart glasses, if you've got them, at an environment, at a scene, and getting a description. Very, very powerful indeed. Really great descriptions. And then you can dig in. But being able to read, I mean, I've been playing with some of this stuff. And if I tell you that I've read Christmas cards, for example, with handwriting, and I know some of the handwriters in my family are not the greatest, and it understood them. So, you know, there's really great stuff coming. I think Studio is the experimental side. Gemini appears to be the kind of, okay, this one's fit for purpose. Let's push it out there and see what happens.
We should give an honourable mention to representation from the assistive technology industry at CES. A couple of familiar names are there, Steve.
There's WeWalk. So WeWalk is a, for those that don't know, is a smart cane. So it's a white cane armed with a set of sensors, which are designed to assist in navigation. So they're looking for objects in front of you further than your cane might reach, objects at head height and similar. And there is an accompanying app for those that use that. Now, they were there and showing off their wares. They've got a new generation of product and are getting quite a lot of kudos, actually.
Did you mention that our friends at Be My Eyes also have been posting a little bit from CES as well?
Be My Eyes were there. And those of, again, those of you who don't know, Be My Eyes, I use Be My Eyes on a daily basis for various different tasks. This is an app that will give you a, you know, you take a picture and you get a description of what's going on, but also you can rely on volunteers and so on if that's preferred. The AI technology behind that, I think they're still using ChatGPT for it, is smarter and smarter as time goes on. And there is some very promising possibility. There was a video last year which showed somebody standing on the pavement and asking Be My Eyes to look for a taxi that was available, and it could tell the difference between, you know, taxis coming along the road that were available and those that weren't, and then it would say, yep, there's one coming, okay, put your hand, flag this one down, yep, you've got it, you know.
We talked about this recently on the show, actually, and it's interesting that the mainstream AI service is like ChatGPT and, of course, the Google Studio have started to offer this sort of video AI, I don't know what you would call it, service, let's say. And that's not appeared in, at time of recording at least, not appeared in any of the specialist apps as you describe in the video from Be My Eyes last year. And maybe they were a little bit early with that announcement, do you think?
That's my take. I know this stuff now is very possible just through the thing I mentioned earlier that we talked about, the Google Studio and so on, experimental stuff.
Right.
It's definitely coming. The question is when. The other issue, of course, as we've talked about in other places, I think, is at the moment you need something that's really straightforward and easy that means you can benefit from this stuff. And at the moment...
Steve, does it really work though, right? Is there a bit of sleight hand going on with some of these services where you ask a question, it takes a frame from the video and does the analysis on that? Is the AI monitoring the video to alert you of things when they happen in the video without you having to constantly ask it?
Yeah, well, certainly with the Google stuff, you have to prompt it. You have to keep on it, you know. Okay, what about now?
Yeah.
What about now then?
Well, and same with GPT, right? We're same with ChatGPT. When I've used the video mode there, you know, you do have to ask questions, and it feels to me like it just takes a bit of a snapshot of what's happening at that moment in the video, rather than having that kind of contextual, you know, awareness of, oh, look who's coming, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of this is to do with, you know, they're always concerned about battery life. Well, this is going to be a big drain. These kind of continually on video, which is what would be required. And of course, you know, you've got to have a good signal. I've had very frustrating experiences more recently when I'm testing some of these new systems where you can have 2, sometimes 3 out of 4 bars on your signal, and 3 or 2 is not good enough. You've got to have a good connection. The servers have to be running properly. There has to be, everything has to be just so. So it's great stuff. It's coming as a way to go. And I think the trouble is people have been sold the idea of it in some cases a little bit earlier than, frankly, it's not ready for prime time. So they bought it in good faith or bought some products in good faith and found that actually they're not really doing what they were promised, and then they're losing faith. And that's a bit of a shame, because I get it, it's the usual thing. You know, they'll say, oh, well, this is for early adopters and so on and so on. But we in the VI community, I would suggest, you know, when there's even a vague hope of this stuff being available and it could genuinely offer you the opportunity to get real-time, you know, real-time understanding of what the hell's going on around you, or find the right doorway, or locate the taxi that's available. You know, bring it on. We want it now. And of course, when somebody tells you it's available, go out and get it and find that actually not quite ready.
But don't forget your core skills. That's the important thing, you know. Technology's made by people, and people are fallible.
I knew you were going to go there. Got to, Steve.
That's it. Thank you so much, Steve Tyler, with just a little taste of the Consumer Electronics Show 2025. We appreciate you keeping across the news from CES this year. Steve Tyler, Director of Technology at Leonard Cheshire. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having us. Cheers.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
I have the Orbit Speak sitting on my toy table in front of me. And to give you an idea of its size, first of all, it's, if I lie it against my iPhone 15 Pro, which is in a case, it's about that size, perhaps slightly longer. the Orbit Speak. But if you remember the Braylon Speak, it's probably about that size. I'm going way back, I realise that. So I'll just take you round on a quick tour of the Orbit Speak. At the moment, it's only US language, so the volume and the speed and everything's there, but the actual language is just US, and it's using Google TTS or another synthesizer called Vocalizer. So you would get Samantha if you're familiar with Samantha. But I'll take you on a small tour of the unit, which is ready to go. So the first item is
File Manager F, 1 of 7.
So there are 1 of 7 items. It's a very simplistic, straightforward device to use. It's speech output, but Braille input. So it has a very nice little Braille keyboard on the top of the unit, and it has a four-way navigation pad with the enter round button in the center of it. Then below that is your space bar, and to the left of the space bar is dot 7, and to the right of the space bar is dot 8. And then either side of those, we have, going from left to right, we've got F1, F2, and then on the right-hand side, we have F3 and F4. So those of you who know your Braille Sense devices will know that that's the same order as the function keys on those. So without further ado, I will just go through the menu, and I've put this device through a speaker at the moment. It's actually going through Bluetooth on the Accord player, just so that we can get a little bit more volume. At the top of the menu is File Manager, and then we have
Editor E, 2 of 7.
So that's your editor, where you would go in and write your notes. You can write in various Braille formats. You can write in grade 1, grade 2, computer Braille, UEB. I have mine set to UEB, but you can write in whatever code you feel comfortable with.
Media Player M, 3 of 7.
This is the Orbit Speak Plus version that I have. So the standard version doesn't have the entertainment center, as it's called, or the media player. But this version does, and it's quite a nice little media player. It's very straightforward to use. If you want to put your media on an SD card or onto internal storage, you can do that, and you can play the files in a variety of formats. So we have
Internet Radio, I, 4 of 7.
This is really good. So we have an internet radio here, which is pretty self-explanatory. You can go through the different countries, you can choose by genre as well.
Utilities submenu, U, 5 of 7.
Okay, so the utilities has a submenu, and in here it's quite a useful little menu to know about.
Check battery status, B, 1 of 9.
So I arrowed right into the utility submenu, and we've got check battery. Obviously, there is a quick command for that as well from the main menu.
Check current time, T, 2 of 9. Check current date, D, 3 of 9. Calculator, C, 4 of 9. Calendar, I, 5 of 9. Alarm clock, A, 6 of 9. Contacts, O, 7 of 9. Voice recorder, R, 8 of 9. Format SD card, F, 9 of 9. Check battery status, B, 1 of 9.
So there we go. It loops back round. So I've been pressing the up and down arrows on the little joypad in the middle of the device on the top to get round the different menus. If there's a submenu, you go right with the right arrow, and you go left arrow to back out of that.
Utilities submenu, U, 5 of 7. Settings, S, 6 of 7.
That's where you would set your, you can choose your Wi-Fi, your Bluetooth, and your Braille code, or all your sort of system settings basically are in there. And finally,
Help submenu, H, 7 of 7.
And if you go into the Help submenu, there is documentation, and there's also an MP3 tutorial in there. So that's really comprises your menu. The unit has just been upgraded to include a voice recorder, and you can find the voice recorder on the standard and the plus models. And there is a shortcut key from the main menu. If you just press and hold quickly the function key number 3, then that drops you into the voice recorder, and you can just start recording by pressing the round button in the middle of the joypad. So it's a very quick way of taking a note if you're out somewhere. It's a very, very light unit. It's got a full-size SD card slot, and it also has a 3.5mm headphone socket as well. As I say, it supports Bluetooth. If you want to pair of headphones, or you want to pair a Bluetooth speaker, that I've done as well. So there is a lot on this little unit for the size and spec of it. Software updates are happening all the time. It's very easy to do a software update. You just go into settings and there is a software update in there. And in that, you just choose whether you want to update the device or not, if there is one available. That's really about it, to be honest. It is really, really nice. You can speed up the speech and the volume if you want to very quickly from the main menu. You can check the battery status, and you can also check the time and the date, things like that, from short keys from the main menu as well. So it is a really nice little unit. I like it very much. And it was a present from Santa. It came from India all the way to Lapland and then down to where I live in Northern Ireland. So that was really nice. As I say, there are two versions. The standard, I think, cost £549. And the Plus model costs £699. This Plus model has the media setting and the internet radio, whereas the standard version just has the remainder, the editor and calculator and things like that. So for the extra money, it is probably worth buying the Plus version, because the internet radio is actually very good. It's very quick to load stations. And as I say, you do get a lot of options. So I hope that's useful. Finally, contact information. At the moment, it's being sold predominantly in the UK, I would say, by Graham Longley of Aspire Consultancy. He was the guy who got one in for me. But it's also being sold by Steve Nutt of Computer Room Services. And I believe Sight and Sound are selling them as well. But I was bought mine from Aspire Consultancy, which is Graham Longley's business. And service was very good and very quick. So if you're looking for something that is not overly priced, I mean, obviously all things have to be considered and factored into when you spend money. But ultimately, if you want something that offers you a few facilities like a calculator and a calendar, a quick contacts, you can pair headphones with Bluetooth, you've got a 3.5 socket, a large SD card, the standard one, then this is certainly worth considering. Thank you.
Jackie Brown with the Orbit Speak Plus. Jackie, who's this device for, do you think?
I think it's probably for people who don't perhaps do a lot of Braille or need Braille output, because it is only a Braille input device where you have a Braille keyboard. So I think it's mainly for people who want something simple to just be able to, you know, take a voice recording, which you can make very quickly, or take a note of something. I think that's the target audience. I don't think it's really for major Braillists, because there is no Braille output on it. It certainly in the day, Braille and Speak was very popular when it first came out. And obviously it was superseded by the Braille Light, which then carried Braille, and that was even more popular. But I think probably in the American market, there are a lot of people who they must see a target audience, a niche, because I don't think they would have gone to the bother of developing it if they didn't think there was an audience out there. But I certainly have it. I'd certainly have uses for it.
Yeah, because to my mind, like if you have a smartphone and if you have a digital recorder, or you have another Braille device. You've sort of covered most of those bases.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to understand where this sits. Does this appeal to you, Callum Stoneman?
Possibly. I mean, there's this and there's the BT Speak as well, isn't there? The two similar devices that are kind of doing the rounds. I think, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, I think the BT Speak is a bit more of a bit more of a geeky device, because that runs Linux and you can you can get really deep into the operating system on there. Whereas this feels like maybe someone who wants a nice, easy device to carry around for Braille input, for listening to your media content, for quickly taking notes and recording. So, I mean, yeah, I can see the uses for it.
Okay, well, let us know if you have got hands-on with the Orbit Speak Plus, or whether you'd like to get hands-on with the Orbit Speak Plus, and where you think this might sit in your life. Let us know. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie, Callum, thanks a lot. Print-impaired learners will, of course, be familiar with RNIB Bookshare, the service that delivers over a million pieces of content for blind, partially sighted, dyslexic and other print-impaired readers. The website has recently undergone a bit of a facelift, and we thought we'd find out more from Simon Jones, who is the managing director and founder of Studio 24, the company responsible for the changes, and Rochelle Pretzel, who is the Bookshare team lead here at RNIB. Welcome in to you both. Rochelle, maybe I'll come to you first. Why did RNIB Bookshare need this update?
Yeah, so Bookshare's old platform foundation was on Drupal 7, and it's coming to its end of life in January of 2025. And we were facing an uncertain outcome, because without the Drupal 7 platform, the service would have been completely unsupported. It basically wouldn't have worked. So fortunately, RNIB, with the support from People's Postcode Lottery, we were able to invest in the sustainability of the service by working with our new partner, Studio 24, Simon and his team, and developing a new website fit for the future and future growth.
Okay, so the platform was end of life. That was the main driver for this.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Simon, let's come to you then. Tell us a bit about Studio 24 and why you were the people to undertake this work.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we're a digital agency. We're dedicated to creating usable and accessible websites that work for everyone. Accessibility is kind of a really big thing for us and always has been throughout our history. I think that's one of the key reasons that we've kind of chosen to work with RNIB on this project. We've also got quite a lot of experience working with charities in public sectors and redesigned for website for W3C, the Web Standards Organization, who publish accessibility standards. So I think all of that stuff and our kind of experience of working on complex projects as well really helped us with this job.
How involved were blind and partially sighted people in the design and testing of the new site?
We obviously serve a high number of university students. And during our testing phases for the project, we did get them involved, and they were able to test the different aspects of the system and the different processes and the functionality of it. So they were either going to be using a screen reader or a Zoom text, those type of features on the website, just to make sure that they are able to navigate the website flawlessly and get to where they need to be able to download a book. And then the download appears where they know it would appear. And it's done just that. And that's where, with the accessibility features of the new website, that's where it's come in, and Studio 24 have matched what our service users need in terms of accessibility. So it's been through all of its tests and it's there and it's working for our service users.
Right. And in terms of that involvement, what did that look like? Was it iterative? Did you have focus groups? Were there blind or partially sighted people on the team? How did that work in practice?
Yeah, so on my team, one of my team members, she's partially sighted, and she's been using and testing and developing the website from the very beginning of it. So she's been able to access everything. So she's like, we're talking about even designing the web pages. Like she's been able to design the web pages. And so we're talking straight from the beginning, everything's been accessible. With the students that we had testing the website, they had scripts that they would run through. So they would be running through different scripts and they would follow basically what's called the story. So they would follow the story to get to the end result. And they've been able to do that, which is basically what a customer's journey would be, either whether searching or downloading, requesting or anything else like that.
That's so important, isn't it? Because, of course, there are an array of automated tests that you can run, but actually having that user involvement at all stages really helps to weed out some of the issues. Either of you, really, can you tell us about the major changes then that users will notice when navigating and downloading books on the new RNIB Bookshare website?
I guess on the new website, the biggest change people are going to see is that it looks different. We're kind of using the new RNIB web templates on the website. We've given it a lot more of a unified feel with the main RNIB website. One of the kind of principles throughout the project was that we wanted to be an evolution, not a revolution. So we kind of worked quite hard to make sure things don't dramatically change. So ideally, when people come to the site, it should work in more or less the same way it did in the past. So hopefully the kind of user journeys are fairly smooth. Things like logging on for the first time should be quite straightforward and easy for people, because we wanted to make that an easy process for people to make sure, you know, launching a brand new website isn't disruptive.
Can you explain some of the specific accessibility benefits for users of the new website?
Yeah, so I think the new RNIB web templates are a lot easier to use for people and should be more accessible for users. Things like when you access the book pages, going to download the books, buttons are a lot larger, kind of larger click areas, which is a good thing for accessibility and usability. So that should make it easier for people to actually get access to the books.
And how much did you have to think about, you know, the colour scheme?
We were kind of informed by the RNIB web templates, so we kind of had a lot of that stuff kind of handed across to us, and we then had to, I guess we had to kind of interpret that, and things like choosing which buttons were going to be pink over secondary colours, like for kind of lighter greys and things like this. But yeah, we had a lot of guidance really from the existing web templates that we kind of worked with.
Right. And were there any considerations for screen reader users?
Yes. I mean, obviously, it's important for the whole site to work accessibly, regardless of what tool you're using to actually view the website, which had some actual accessibility testing with users of accessibility needs as well, to make sure they can kind of get through the site and use that really well. So there were quite a few changes we made during the testing. Things like the forms, for example, we kind of iterated them and made the error messages a lot clearer. I think we made some changes to make it really clear which fields are required and which ones are optional. And making sure all of that is really obvious to screen readers and kind of announced in the correct way, which hopefully will be improvements for the end users.
If readers haven't been on RNIB Bookshare since that recent relaunch, is there anything they need to know? I mean, if you haven't downloaded a book in a while, are you going to have to set up a new account, or what are you going to have to do differently in order to access the new website?
All they really need to do is just log in with the same credentials that they had before we launched, and they will just need to reset their password is all. I mean, the functionality of the website is exactly the same as our old website. It just looks different, but they'll be able to search for their books in the same spot. Like the search function's still at the top. That's like the accessibility, like it's all there. There's not too much that's changed really. It's just logging in and resetting their passwords, and then they're off really, and they can download as they please.
And given that many readers access RNIB Bookshare via Dolphin Easy Reader, which is an app on iOS and Android, do they need to do anything differently?
Yeah, they're going to need to make sure that their Dolphin Easy Reader is updated, so their app is updated to the most recent update. So I think at the moment, it's like, well, at launch, it was 11.04 for the update. I think it's recently updated again. Now it's at like 11.05, but they just need to update their app to the most recent. And they can log into the Dolphin Easy Reader, and then they just need to go into the library and find RNIB Bookshare, and then they can log in with their details. And then their history, everything should be there. There's just it's basically just updating the app. We'll link everything to the relaunch of the website.
Right, so you just need to log in again and all your history will come back. Yeah, excellent. Okay. And what feedback have we received since the launch?
So Taylor's my team member. We have noticed improvements to the functionality, and it's certainly enabling us to do our jobs easier. We've had positive feedback from customers too about how some of the features make things quicker and easier. And then for one example, we had one teacher come back and said, "The new website is so much cleaner and clearer to use. Thank you. The process for everything is just so much easier. Like, it's easier for my team to respond to tickets, to get people signed up, and it's just the customer journey is just that much quicker."
That's so important that people do feedback, whether, it's that things need to improve or that things have improved. It's always important to hear that, to know that all that hard work was really worth it, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the benefit of moving to a modern platform and working closely with Studio 24 is that we can listen, and we do listen to the feedback from our customers, and we can make those improvements based on their feedback. And Studio 24 have been so quick with when we come back to them with something, they are quick to resolve it. And it's the they've been there have just been rapid improvements from the launch, and it's been incredible to work with Studio 24.
Fantastic. I had a couple of readers told me that they had found the site just a touch slower since the update. Is that been your experience? Is that something to be expected at this stage? Are we all happy with the performance of the new site?
Yeah, there was a lot of data we kind of imported into the new website just before launch. We wanted to carry across, obviously, all the users and the book histories. There were some performance issues initially, lots of which we improved. So things should be a lot faster than they were in that first week or so after launch. And it's something we're closely monitoring. So we obviously plan to kind of implement more improvements as we move forward as well. Hopefully things might have been a bit slower initially, but hopefully, as Rochelle mentioned, we will be making kind of improvements continuously to the website.
Right, and do tell us about that. What can we expect in terms of further changes going forward?
Yes, so we have quite a long list of backlog items of things that we'd like to kind of continue improving, which we're discussing with R&B at the moment. One of which is bringing the web reader back. It's something that was excluded from the original project, the ability to read one of the books online via a web browser. But we're planning to kind of bring that back because, based on user feedback, it's a popular item, which I think is important to make sure it's still available on the web.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for your time. I appreciate you're going to be super busy as the new site beds in. Simon, where can we find out more about Studio 24 and your other work?
You could visit our website. It's studio24.net. We post to our blog quite regularly, and we also have an accessible writing guide, which might be useful for some people.
And Rochelle, for anyone not using R&IB Bookshare, I mean, just why wouldn't you, right? Because there's so much great content on there, particularly to support learning. What's the best way to get signed up?
You visit www.rnibbookshare.org. There will be a sign up button on the upper right-hand side, and you can of the web page. If you click sign up and the details, if you just follow the instructions on signing up, then you can get signed up. And then, yeah, you can get your school signed up and get the students on there that need the accessible formats for their books and the curriculum.
Simon Jones from Studio 24 and Rochelle Pretzel from RNIB. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. We've had an email come flooding in from Sue, who writes, "Hi team, I was wondering if you could suggest some suitable ways of finding items by sound. I free run my guide dog in a huge field, so lay down his harness and lead on the ground while I launch his ball. Inevitably, I stray away from where I initially stood and end up struggling to find the harness and lead. And Sue goes on to say that she attaches a polythene bag to a branch so then the good folk at Be My Eyes can help find a place. But I guess what we're looking for here, folks, is some sort of audio beacon. Have we got any suggestions? Let's come to you, Hubert. You've got a guide dog. What do you do?
I do indeed, and I actually, to not stray too much from the text, I don't. I actually keep my lead, kind of his lead, on my neck, around my neck, to kind of keep it with me, because that is the problem when you launch a ball and you step away from a marker. When it comes to audio solutions, I think any kind of finding device items, such as a tile or maybe an AirTag, they do play audio. My only concern is some of them have a very quiet audio than others, so you might have to kind of use a bit of trial and error, because I find, for example, the AirTags, they do play audio, but it's not the loudest sound. So if you're in the middle of a large field, how good you might be able to hear it, I'm not sure. Maybe a tile emits a louder sound. It's kind of works on a similar basis, where you can attach it to an item and be able to, using an app, find it and get it to play an audio sound. So I think it all depends as to finding kind of trackers that maybe have the best sounding loud audio, which I could probably recommend either a tile or an AirTag.
Yeah, I do find those quiet, even indoors, to be honest, the AirTag, you can barely hear it. Callum Stoneman, have you got any suggestions?
I was going to say the same thing, yeah. If you've got a smartphone, then yeah, a tile or an AirTag. Obviously, the AirTag, just to quickly go over like a couple of pros and cons. I mean, the AirTag, yeah, the audio is pretty quiet from them, which is a downside. However, depending on the phone you've got, if you've got an iPhone, it can also direct you to it. So it can provide directions, you know, as you walk towards it, it can tell you if you're getting closer or further away in real time. So that could be useful. I don't know if the tile does the same thing. I haven't really got hands on with the tile, but and obviously the other downside to the AirTag is that they only work on iOS, really. So if you're on Android, I think Tile or something similar would be your only way to go, really. If you've not got a smartphone, though, then I'm not entirely sure, to be honest.
Jackie?
Yeah, a couple of things spring to mind. As Callum and Hubert have said, the AirTags, I bought a pack of those a good while ago, and I find them useful because you do get alerts when you move away from where you've got the AirTag, and you do, as you say, you know, you're able to move closer and closer to it, because it does give you that. But if you're not using a smart device, I guess there used to be something called Locator, so that's spelled LOC8OR, the figure 8 in the middle, Locator. And I don't know if they're still available, but they definitely do emit quite a loud sound. They're quite useful for things like putting one on a wheelie bin. If you've got several wheelie bins in the neighborhood and you're looking for the one that belongs to you, you don't need a smartphone for those. But I don't know whether they're still in existence or not. And there is a sort of dog GPS, like Patapaws or something like that, they're called. I've seen them advertised on TV, where you could put something on the dog's collar, and then I think it works in a similar way, so that you can find your dog. I know it means that it's not really for the dog, but perhaps you could put one on the harness itself, so that when you put it down, you could find it. I think there are things out there, you're just going to have to research them a little bit.
So Sue, sometimes actually technology might not even be the answer, you know, having another physical landmark, or putting the harness on a bench, or finding some other old school analog means of identifying that location might be the way to go. But some suggestions there, and let's hope our listeners can come up with more. techtalk@rnib.org.uk if you've got any ideas for Sue. But thanks so much for getting in touch. That's it from Tech Talk this time. Thank you as ever for your company. If you would like to get involved, if you've got a suggestion of something you would like us to cover, something you would like to hear, or maybe you would even like to record a voice note, why not send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich and Callum Stoneman, bye for now.
Bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.